Hello, everyone. I'm going to cut right to the chase right now because I am super excited for another episode of the Charity Charge Show, podcast, whatever you want to call it. We keep things really easygoing and loose here. I have sitting across from me Katie Russell, who is demand generation manager for SAFE right here in Austin, Texas, an amazing group. And one of the cool things that I really appreciate about just having you in the studio right now is, you know, we actually met through an event in Austin. Philanthropitch hosted by Notley, great, great organization.
Yeah.
not really that long ago, maybe 6-8 weeks ago, your organization SAFE was presenting there. But I just love the fun nature of the nonprofit community, especially here in Austin, and being able to kind of collaborate and just kind of get to know one another. So with all that being said, Katie, would you talk a little bit about what SAFE is and who you are and how you came to get involved with them?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. So SAFE is a nonprofit that's been around in Austin for about 45 years. They were a merger of Safe Place and Austin Children's Shelter. They're working in this violence and abuse space. They're both doing so much in Austin community, and it really made sense to come together to be more impactful, to serve survivors of child abuse, domestic violence, sexual assault, and human trafficking. So when I say that, I think a lot of nonprofits they work on individual pieces of care. But what's really cool about SAFE is that we really have this wraparound care. I mean, we have housing, it's counseling, therapy, legal services, like parenting programs, like school programs. Like, SAFE does so much in the Austin community. And how I got brought on is that, you know, I've been aware of SAFE. I went to school at UT. I've been in Austin for forever. And I had wanted to find a way to bring, you know, my business experience into nonprofits more, and SAFE was doing something really cool with called the SAFE Institute, which was this initiative to, you know, spread our impact, one, and generate our own sustainable earned revenue stream, which is what we were pitching at Philanthropitch, our whole idea.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
I want you to keep going on. I'm only going to interrupt for a second because I'm really excited to share that, because I think that is such a needed and obviously hot topic in the philanthropic world, this aspect of earned revenue. So I'm so excited to have you on and have you talk about your experience with it, and hope that it'll help other nonprofits that are listening along.
Yeah. Wait, should I keep going?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, kind of back to you, just a little bit about, I think, you know, you're just talking a little bit more about kind of the different wrapper of like the services that's SAFE and how you got involved.
Okay. Yeah. So SAFE has been, you know, doing so much in the community, and we really wanted to expand that. And we realized that, you know, workplaces was this whole kind of untouched area. And as all, you know, all these businesses are pouring into Austin, by 2040, it's estimated the Austin population is going to double. And, you know, SAFE is really forward thinking as an organization. And they're like, hey, like, how can we expand, you know, housing or services? But what can we do on the preventative side? What can we be doing to help, you know, change the culture here, help educate, help prevent people from coming to our services? You know, we don't want to have more people coming for our, you know, sexual assault services and our, like, our emergency shelters. Like, we want to get on the forefront of that, which is really why our program was born. And that's what we're doing, the SAFE Institute.
And as you share that, I have to applaud you. It finally, like, and this is part of what's cool, I was sharing with you, like, why I started this podcast, is I just kept hearing, you know, getting to know nonprofits, what they're doing, the amazing things, but it's here in this kind of focus moment that I'm actually really able to connect dots. I mean, you're trying to put yourselves out of business, essentially, you know, which a lot of businesses would never think about that or to do, but you're really here to serve, you know, and it is such an epidemic and problem. I love that you're trying to be proactive and very much try to solve the problem, not the symptoms. I mean, it's really cool that you're taking that forward leap. I think the other thing I see a lot is, you know, nonprofits are just stuck so much in their pattern of what they've been doing for year after year, decade after decade. They don't have that higher level perspective, perhaps, to just that we all get stuck in. There's no pointing fingers or saying any people are wrong, but what a fresh perspective that you're doing here with SAFE. But I also just say that for any nonprofits listening along, you know, maybe try to take a step back.
Yeah, well, I think to your point, that is what's, like, really cool, is that, like, SAFE has always been growing, and, like, our leadership is, like, incredible in the way that they're, like, forward looking, and, like, their vision for, like, it's not just about what we do now, but, like, what does the city need? Like, what do the people here need? Where are we not serving that we can, you know? And I think that that's something really big, because the preventative stuff we have been doing, you know, in the community, in the schools, you know, a lot of this stuff we've been doing, but, you know, there was just with the rise of the Me Too movement, we were getting outreach from businesses in the community that were like, hey, we maybe have some issues. Do you guys have anything? Can you help us navigate this? We don't know how to handle it and like make sure our employees feel safe.
Exactly. So with that being said, just kind of jumping into it. So when I was at Philanthropitch, what I learned about is this new program that you have, Newer, where you're going into the workplace, and why don't you maybe take it from there? And if it's appropriate, give one of your earlier customers, or first was with Alamo Drafthouse.
Yeah.
Is that right? So feel free to take it as you want, but I think as tangible as you can make the example or real world is helpful.
Yeah. So Alamo was one of our first customers that came to us. And you know, we were able to really go in and work with them. And what our program is, we call it the BASE program. It stands for Building a Safe Environment. And the BASE program is really interactive trainings, customized consulting, and incident support. So we like to think about that as you know, sexual harassment incidents, like about 1 in 5 people are experiencing. So odds are in your workplace, it's going to happen. So we can be there either in the preventative side, where hey, like, we really want to make sure our policies are supportive. We want to train. We want to set expectations. Or we're there in the reactive side, and we'll come in and we'll make sure that, like, you know, we'll help handle the situations with empathy, look at your policies, like, are you supporting your employees? And, you know, what can you do differently? And I like to think that one of the really strong suits that's helping Austin communities is, you know, navigating all these gray areas of like flirting in the workplace, dating in the workplace, like how to have some of these disclosure conversations, because the workforce in Austin is so young. That's what we're seeing. You know, people are getting promoted really early, especially in all the startups here, you know, and people haven't managed other people. You went from being a peer to being a manager the next day. Well, what's different? How does your new role affect like how you're perceived? And, you know, maybe when you were a peer, like they were more comfortable with hugs, and now they're your boss, and, you know, maybe they feel stranger about that. The power dynamic has shifted. So I think that's kind of an overall. And I think Book People is one of our customers, and they're a great example of a super proactive company that they, you know, their employees interface with the public all day. So it's not just, you know, making sure your employees are trained, but how can you protect them if they're consumer facing? So we really went in there and helped them, you know, look at their culture and look at their policies, procedures. How could they support their employees, like if they're ever in an uncomfortable incident? And, you know, make sure that their employees are like, oh, you can always come to us. You're safe. We trust you, and we're here to believe you. And that, I think that's what SAFE brings, is definitely that like survivor first language into companies, and making sure employees know like, hey, we believe you, and like, we want to support you through it.
As you say that, I do want to get back and ask you some questions on a practical basis of kind of the program. Mm-hmm. I think people listening along are really curious about that.
Yeah.
But one of the things that comes top of mind that, you know, I think we should acknowledge for a second too, that I hear a lot as I get to know more and more people that are working directly at nonprofits, oftentimes in development advancement roles also, is there's issues there too, you know, with donors trying to potentially take advantage of them, and you know, and sexual harassment and issues that come up. This is like a product or service also that the nonprofits need themselves.
Absolutely. No, I mean, it's super, I mean, it's super versatile.
As you talk about the customer facing issue, right? And I think about customers of nonprofits oftentimes are the donors, are the supporters, but sometimes the person that's in that development role might potentially have an awkward situation with a supporter, or, you know, they're taking them out for drinks and, you know, things get escalated and it puts them in an uncomfortable spot. I don't know your personal experience, and I don't want to specifically put you on the spot if you're not comfortable with it, but one of my good friends who runs Grace Point Foundation in Tampa, Ian Adair, nationally speaks at nonprofit conferences, and a lot of his focus is like the mental wellness and health of nonprofit professionals. And a lot of times you told me, you know, these are the topics that come up that, you know, individuals that work in a nonprofit feel uncomfortable, but then, you know, sometimes if they go to their, either they keep it inside, or if they go to their, you know, executive director or something and say something, you know, but that person that's making them uncomfortable is donating a lot of money on the board. Yeah. It's like, how do you deal with that?
Yeah. And like, I think that's interesting. It's funny. I was just talking to my mom about that. She works at a nonprofit hospital and she said that like, it's interesting.
Which one? Let's give them a plug here.
Texas Presby in Dallas.
Awesome. All right. Shout out. Yeah.
But
thank you to the 45 people listening. Yeah, I appreciate it.
But she was just saying how, you know, it's interesting when you're like nonprofit, you're so focused on outside that you also have to make sure you focus on the inside and your employee care. But to your point about industries, I mean, what industry do you know that doesn't have conferences, that doesn't have events like that? I mean, conferences are something that like I personally have seen a lot at and experienced. I mean, like, you know, you send people from around the country into this one city and there's lots of drinks. I just got back from one.
I was in Chicago for a MasterCard conference. Effectively, I was there Saturday through last night. And it was a lot of, actually really educational and informational during the day. But then it's what you do at conferences. It's the classic, you know, nighttime that kind of entertainment and drinks and food and all that stuff.
Well, and that's what when you talk about, like, what do we actually get in and do? So within our training is really the core of our program. And I think what's really so strong about it is that a lot of, you know, any sort of sexual harassment trainings are like, most of them, when we have talked to any of our clients or other companies, are like, they're literally like, you know, online, check the box. But like ours, like, it's so like interactive and personal. And we take examples like from the company and situations, and we make like scenarios. And then we put employees or leadership in those, like, hey, if you're at a conference and you're seeing like, maybe there's a older manager and it looks like maybe he's making one of your employees uncomfortable. How can you go handle that? Like, what are the different ways? Can you distract? Can you go just like, you know, ask them, or like, how can you be involved and really, can you delegate? Can you go ask somebody else to go, you know? And we really get in there and provide people with really tangible ways to like stop these behaviors and how they can address them.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, no, even as you're saying there, I mean, I think number one, you're helping those employees take a step back and gain more self-awareness and be more proactive about it. And then some of the tips.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's great. I think, and then everyone could kind of also probably look out for one another.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they don't feel so isolated. And can assess the situation.
And a big one too is like the management. Like a lot of the companies we're working it with, like first we go in and we train their executive team. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things we focus there too on disclosure conversations. Like how to really respond to things, you know, with empathy. Because you know, I've heard of stories and examples where, you know, if someone's disclosing something, the manager gets super overwhelmed, immediately goes and grabs legal, brings legal into the room and HR, and you know, it doesn't know how to really have these conversations and be kind and have some empathy in the room. So I think that's like a really big focus for management teams, because that's how people can get into trouble too. If you don't respond, like, you're representing the company. If you're not, you know, and that's where EEOC files and, you know, claims happen.
No, 100%. I think that this is just such an amazing initiative that you have here. So right now the focus is with SAFE and kind of your boots on the ground in this Austin, Central Texas market.
Yeah. Mainly, we're really focused in Central Texas here. Specifically, like, the industries have been a lot of the tech companies and then kind of the retail consumer facing, like I was saying, because those have been the areas that have just reached out to us the most. And we have traveled if clients want us, because there's some remote offices, right? And sometimes we will go travel as well. We do really want to expand like out greater. But we're definitely still growing here, and we've got a couple trainers, and you know, our trainings are just like, so they're in person too. We're working on like web formats as well. Like there's a lot of development and a whole roadmap happening. But yeah, definitely here. We want to start with Austin, and you know, really use this as like a model to show like the transformation we can have here in our community.
And so roll it out for me kind of on a process standpoint, kind of from A to Z. So for a client, for example, like an Alamo Drafthouse, either they reach out to you or you reach out to them. It sounds like the next step is you have some sort of information education with the executives. Then what happens from there? Can you just kind of, to people that are listening along, kind of try to give them a sense of the programming that you provide?
Yeah. So, I mean, I would say, you know, it's really versatile. So it definitely depends kind of what I said. Are we in a proactive space or are we in an incident space? Because that definitely, you know, like, affects how we're going to go into the situation, if it's more reactive and we need to do some like damage control, or if it's really proactive. But I would say we go into both of them just like really setting ground rules. And the first meeting we have, Carly, she's our client relations manager. She really talks with whoever's involved, you know, talks about all their needs, what they're wanting out of this, what are their biggest like strengths in their culture, what are their weaknesses, what can we help with? And then we kind of come up with a game plan. We'll have, you know, however many employees we'll have a rollout of different kinds of trainings. We actually just closed City of Austin, so we're going to be training about 500 of their employees over the next like 6 months.
This is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Right here. I have them in the studio.
Yeah.
This is wow. I'm like, I was already like blown away and humbled. That is super cool.
Yeah. So like, you know, so with them, for instance, you know, there's tons of different kinds of employees. So training maybe their field crew is going to be different than training their office crew. There's different examples, there's different scenarios. So then our training team really meets, they'll meet with like our client, and we'll talk about all those sorts of scenarios, the customizations again, and then we'll begin to roll out the trainings. Additionally, a lot of times what happens after that is we'll take a look at their HR policy, their codes of conduct. We also have a survey that people will fill out. And then, you know, after that survey is filled out, our trainers will make some recommendations based off it. Like, hey, looks like your employees like really feel strongly about this, like maybe consider taking this action.
We need to partner up. This is incredible, because I really see it from the all angles, but from the nonprofit angle as well.
Yeah.
I would be super interested in collaborating with you on a way that we can create like training modules for nonprofits, and then maybe we pay for it, but provide it as a service to our nonprofits.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we're expanding right now.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, wow. What's crazy to me as I'm just thinking about this is the absolute need, period, for it, and then the size of the market for it.
Yeah.
You know, which is like
everyone,
and,
right?
And I'm sitting here thinking, like, I get that. I mean, it's all public record. From a revenue perspective, Safe is big. You know, all things considered, it's a big group.
It's a big nonprofit.
Big nonprofit. Absolutely. And you've got other, you know, programs and things and all of that, but like this could dwarf that. if you put the resources behind it. I mean, this is just incredible.
Well, and I think that that's something to think about.
We talk about the city, the municipality aspect of doing this and all. One of the things that's really neat that MasterCard has a big initiative and division on is smart cities. So they work directly with the cities to leverage MasterCard technology and services and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So this could be like an incredible conduit to providing, you know, this type of program to all of those to the municipalities.
Well, yeah, and I think that's what's really different about our program too, is that it's not like a training that maybe you just do like one time, and you know, then you maybe get another online module like 1 year after. Like, what's cool about us is that, you know, the same wraparound care that we try to provide for survivors, we do provide for survivors, is what we're trying to do for businesses now. You know, it's a training, is it, you know, because we believe like really strongly in that, in the consulting aspect. Like, what that means is like, you need to have the policies in place to support the training. Because if you're telling people that, you know, they are safe, they can come forward, we're going to protect you. A lot of times in Austin, you know, until companies hit 50 people, they don't even have HR. They don't have policies in place. They don't have things that, you know, if there is misconduct, that leaders can, you know, fall back on and like, you know, have something to go off of. And so we're trying to make sure that, you know, setting them up so that things don't happen, but if they do happen in the future, that they can take what is a really big disruptor in culture, and instead of sexual harassment is extremely disruptive, but turn it into instead like an inflection point of, hey, this is what we stand for, this is what we don't stand for, you know, and turn it into like a positive. And we've seen some of our clients like do that incredibly, you know, like, you know, maybe they have fired someone, but then like they've really come back together and they feel stronger as a culture because they understand that their employers protect them and they care. And, you know, that's all you really want as an employee.
Absolutely. I think this is super cool. I am so happy that you came in
Thanks.
To do it. That's why I love what I do. It's like so intellectually stimulating to learn about these. Yeah. And it's also fun when it's happening in the city that I live in.
Right.
You know, and you're trying to, you know, address something. I want to, if you don't mind, just shift gears just a moment.
Sure.
So you're, I'm not going to ask you your age. I'm not going to do that. but you're a young professional in the nonprofit world now. And so just curious, you know, I think that, I think a lot about from this podcast and the things that, that I'd like to be doing just to provide some sort of value and help to anyone that's younger, that's thinking about getting involved in nonprofits. Can you take us through, like, when you were at UT and you were getting ready to come out of college, what was going on in your mind when you're thinking about career-wise? If this wasn't your first role, which I don't think it was, mm-hmm. You know, kind of a little bit of your career path and then kind of, and the reason why I'm asking that is thinking it through the lens of like advice that you'd give to someone that's maybe thinking of going into the nonprofit world or just trying to figure out what to do out of college.
Yeah. So I feel like that's shifted a lot, as I think most people's have. But at UT, I was a radio, television, film and a public relations double major and a minor international business. So I had a lot of varying interests happening. But since I was like a sophomore, I had been interning a ton in Austin. That's the biggest advice I would say to anyone, like intern, even when you're in school, in the summers or during class, because that's where I was really seeing, you know, things I really liked. I had some internships I really didn't like, some others I really loved. And eventually a lot of them were going into the tech space, which led me to Trendkite, which was my last internship my senior year. And during that time, this is where kind of like I think a big crossover to nonprofit was happening for me. I applied and got accepted to Texas 4000 for Cancer, which, are you familiar with that?
Yes, it's the bike race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. So my junior year.
Come on. At some point, I'm going to do a trivia, like nonprofit quiz trivia, because I think I could win.
You know of all
a
of them.
Nonprofit,
yeah.
Jeopardy, yes.
So for people who don't know what
not
it
all,
is, though,
but a lot.
Texas 4000 for Cancer is the longest student run charity bike ride in the world. We bike from Austin, Texas to Anchorage, Alaska to raise money and awareness for cancer. So that was a really big thing that when I was interning and after I graduated, I was training for that. It's like a 4,000-mile bike ride, hence the 4,000. So there was – luckily, like, my employer was extremely flexible with what I was needing to do with that. And what was really awesome is that after I graduated, they hired me full-time while I was still training. And then they actually gave me a leave of absence to go do the bike ride. And then I got to come back to my job. And doing Texas 4000 was incredible and a huge shift to really feel and see what it was like to be doing something that, I mean, every day people be, you know, crying, like seeing us, we're like so grateful for what we were doing and all the stories that I'm sure you're hearing on this podcast. You know, it's like all these people that really cared what we were doing. And so when I got back to Austin, it definitely shifted my perspective a little bit in terms of, I loved Trendkite, but I was like, I wanted to be something that, be doing something that I really felt was connected and really helping people in a very direct way, like I did with a nonprofit. So I was there, like worked my way up, like was there, and in total I was there like 2.5 years. And I had been, you know, kind of looking around, and I was looking for something because, you know, the hard part of what you're talking about when you're young, the nonprofit roles are super entry level. You can't make a lot of money really to sustain living here. I mean, I would have had to move, or I don't know, I couldn't have lived where I lived and like made my car payments. but I'd been looking for a while, and then I found this role, which was just this weird crossover of nonprofit and for-profit. And that's what I was really curious about is, you know, I think in the nonprofit community, like, you know, there's all this technology and resources being poured into for-profit. There's like, but then in nonprofits, you know, they're not having those because they don't have the same income and the same, you know, venture capital that like we had at Trendkite, where we could have the nicest of the nice and go to all these conferences. And, you know, so it was like, I want to take some of the knowledge that I've used, you know, growing in this, you know, because I was like hire 100 at Trendkite. And
wow.
Right when
they
I
more
left,
recently went public. Or
yeah. Right. When
right?
I,
yeah.
Right before
huge
I left.
Success story here.
Yeah, yeah. Like huge. Yeah. Huge success story. So it was like, going from being small to mid-sized to eventually, you know, being acquired, it was like, I feel like I soaked up so much knowledge there. And yeah, I wanted to go like help and take that somewhere else, which is, you know, how I ended up here.
It's amazing. No, it's a super cool, I think, progression. You know, I think if I just kind of replay it back, what I'm hearing from you is you were willing to just try things and kind of see what happened, you know, through the internships, which I think is a very natural, healthy thing mm-hmm. to do while you're in college. And then I think take an initial step at Trendkite, you know, and pick up all this experience and see, like, you know, you kind of first real job, so to speak, at this for-profit company.
Yeah.
But your passion pulled you to do the Texas 4000. And through that, you're open to seeing what's next, which I think is a really awesome characteristic about you. And I think something that, you know, as other younger people are thinking about this, a really great model or framework yeah. for people to think about their, you know, what to do when you're in college.
Well, and it's scary. You know, I think I learned a lot, like even leaving your first job, you know, it sounds like so hard. And, you know, I felt like I cared so much. I'd put so much into that brand and really like a ton of, I was the campaign manager there. So I was like all outgoing marketing campaigns, like, you know, my writing style, like my voice, like I felt like I had been a huge part of as it was growing, and leaving that was hard. And, you know, I really liked my team there. I had so many friends there, but you know, I also learned that, you know, friends leave jobs. You can't ever like stay one place, you know, just because of people or because you kind of feel like you got to follow where you're being called to do, because you meet like incredible people and incredible like tasks and projects. Like there's so many different ones, you know, you just.
Well, I also think, riffing off of what you're saying, to me, it's incredible. There's obviously a lot of kind of tried and true metaphors and sayings and stuff, but truly when one door closes, another one opens. Mm-hmm. And if your perspective is to always live in a state of fear and scarcity, you know, that's what you're going to feel and experience on a daily basis. And I think for you, you know, I even take back a little bit of that saying of, you know, one door closed, another one opens. They kind of all stay open in a sense. So,
yeah.
You know, you can still have those relationships with those people, but now look at all the things you're getting are additive through your role with Safe.
Yeah.
You know, it's super cool.
Well, and it's crazy. Yeah.
I just want to add one more thing that sometimes I just think is crazy about like how the world unfolds and all of that. It's like, even like your experience, I'm getting a lot out of like hearing, and then we're going to share this. And like a lot of people are going to, you know, and if 10 people hear it and it like changes them and helps them, like you're such an awesome role model for that, you know? But if you had never bothered to try something new and be open to like your calling, then like this doesn't happen. Like sometimes I just mm-hmm. think of the craziness of like how perfect the world just has to work. It's like where you are is exactly where you should be right now.
Well, yeah. And I think that's true too. Cause you know, and another part, which like we kind of touched on, but it's like, you know, I've definitely experienced sexual harassment at work. I have so many friends, I've had mentors, I've had other like men at my company. So I think too, like all these situations that are really trying for my friends, the times that I've, you know, been there, tried to handle these situations. And now I look at the work that I'm getting to do to hopefully go back and like help these environments I came from. I don't want any other like young woman ever working an event to feel uncomfortable like I have felt at events, right? And like understand how she can stand up and like how she can handle it and asking for help and, you know, trusting employers, like all this stuff that's difficult when you're coming right out of college. Nobody's preparing you for that, you know? And I think, and I view it very much now, it's like that's on your employer. It's on your employer to really help educate and support people, especially coming out of college that aren't in these environments. And you create the culture, you create the safety. And like, and that's what I hope that with Safe Institute, that's what we're able to do, is to go in and partner with those employers, you know, and help create these dialogues that are a little uncomfortable, but are like in the end, like really, really incredibly beneficial.
It's amazing. To that point, you know, is kind of a call to action for anyone that's listening that would like to learn more or potentially hire you for their company or nonprofit. How can they find you? What's the best way?
I actually just launched a website 2 weeks ago. So safeinstitute.org. There's all the information on there. You can fill out a form and contact us. That's the easiest way. Our team will get back to you. So
that's amazing. Well, look, Katie, I really want to thank you so much for coming in. I learned a lot actually more about this, and I really appreciate what you're doing for the community here in Austin. And as you continue to scale for truly the rest of the world, it's awesome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's been great.
And thank you to everyone that continues to listen along. You know, I was just out most recently in Chicago at this MasterCard conference, and you know, the first thing, a couple of people came up to me that I hadn't seen in 6-7 months. And they said, hey, we saw you were launching a podcast. We've been listening. We love it. So I truly, truly appreciate that. So thank you to everyone that's listening. Have a great day.